Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The European Union Commission warns against Russian moves in Ukraine. And in Lesotho, a prime minister flees a coup. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. European Commission head José Manuel Barroso is warning Russia the crisis is reaching the point of no return. After discussions in Brussels with Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko, Barroso says the European Union is ready to take new measures, but added the door remains open to a political solution with Russia. President Poroshenko said the pressure that Ukraine feels could someday be shared by European nations.
Let's not try to flame the new, not to initiate, to spark the new flame of war in Europe. That is what I'm proud that we survive a generation without the war, and I hate the idea.
A spokesman for Ukraine's National Security Council says government troops are pulling out of several eastern Ukraine cities after rebel forces displayed increased force, and a fighter jet was shot down Friday by a Russian missile. The prime minister of Lesotho has fled to South Africa to escape what he says is a coup attempt in the tiny South African kingdom. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The first reports of a coup attempt in the tiny mountainous kingdom, surrounded entirely by South Africa, came in early Saturday. A peaceful election in 2012 had produced a three-party coalition that many observers thought might finally stabilize the country. Lesotho is a constitutional monarchy with a king whose powers are largely ceremonial. From South Africa, Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Tabane told VOA Saturday that he left Maseru after receiving information that Lesotho's military had targeted him for assassination. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And this is VOA News. Senegal is now the fifth West African country involved in the regional Ebola outbreak, announcing its first case on Friday. Senegal's health minister told reporters the infected person is a university student who sought treatment at a hospital in the capital, Dakar, this week. He said the young man admitted having contact with Ebola patients in Guinea. Ebola has killed more than 1,500 people this year in Guinea, Liberia, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone. The World Health Organization is warning the six-month-old outbreak is escalating, with 40% of total cases occurring in the last 21 days. A suicide bomber targeting the Iraqi military has killed at least 11 people, including four soldiers, in a town near Baghdad. Iraqi authorities say the bomber detonated explosives in his car at a checkpoint about 20 kilometers south of the capital. 24 people were wounded in the attack. Britain is raising its terrorism alert level in response to the rise of Islamic extremist groups in Iraq and Syria, and the belief that British citizens fighting with such groups could bring terrorism home. VOA's Al Pessin reports from London.
The new British terror threat level is called severe, which means an attack is highly likely, but there's no information about a specific terrorist plan. Prime Minister David Cameron said the decision was made by an independent government commission because the rise of the group in Iraq and Syria, once called ISIL or ISIS, which now calls itself the Islamic State, poses a threat to Britain.
What we're facing in Iraq now with ISIL is a greater and deeper threat to our security than we have known before.
Cameron said about 500 British citizens have gone to join the group in Syria and Iraq. Those men can easily re-enter Britain. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
A gunfight has erupted between Philippine peacekeepers and Syrian rebels in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. Philippines defense minister says the militants attacked one of the two camps Saturday, manned by peacekeepers. There have been no immediate reports of casualties. Meantime, the United Nations says 44 peacekeepers taken from their post at the Israel-Syrian border a day earlier were removed for their own protection, according to assurances from credible sources that the peacekeepers are safe and in good health. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is calling for a broad global coalition to combat Islamic State militants, also known as ISIS. In an opinion editorial published in the New York Times today, Kerry said the terrorist group is a rising threat, exhibiting repulsive savagery and cruelty, but could be checked with the united response of the broadest coalition possible of nations led by the United States. Afghan officials say at least six people died today when Taliban militants attacked an intelligence headquarters in the eastern city of Jalalabad. A spokesman for the provincial governor said the attack began with a suicide vehicle bombing, followed by a lengthy gun battle. I'm Marty Johnson.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening. It's Saturday, August 30th. Welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga.
The situation there involves total indiscipline in the army, led by the commander himself. It was government decision to relieve him of his command after many years in charge.
Lesotho Prime Minister flees to South Africa following an alleged attempted military coup.
I'm pleading to WHO they need to take the affected staff and to investigate how he affected the remaining doctors, staffs should be there trying to treat the victims.
The World Health Organization shuts its laboratory in Sierra Leone after a healthcare worker gets infected with Ebola.
Take your seat, Shibangu, take your seat. I have not recognized you.
And he has not answered the question.
Honorable Shibangu, I will throw you out of the house.
And the newest party in South Africa's parliament faces a two-week suspension after getting into a shouting match with members of the ruling ANC party. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane has called on the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to help restore law and order in the country following an alleged attempted military coup on Saturday. In an interview with VOA, Mr. Thabane said he fled to neighboring South Africa to protect his family after he received intelligence that he was being targeted for assassination by the military. Thabane tells reporter Peter Klote that his fight to root out corruption in the government led to the attempt to overthrow his administration.
The situation on the ground is still tense. And as you phone me, I'm outside the country now. I'm in South Africa. Because I think if I had stayed, you wouldn't be talking to me, I would be dead. The situation there involves total indiscipline in the army, led by the commander himself. It was government's decision to relieve him of his command after many years in charge. And that, of course, was done within the constitution and was done constitutionally. Now, surprisingly, he took this to be a challenge that he had to face. Now, I also have information from intelligence that we also had some political backing from some of my colleagues. That complicates the situation a little bit, but the focal point is the army getting out of order, running around the streets, threatening people. And the army quite openly stating that they want my neck. I got information a little early and I got out of the way, so I'm still alive.
You said that this has political implications. Is this a move by people in the ruling party, or is it a move backed by some opposition figures?
I suspect that we have political disagreements that are ongoing, and there is a lot of progress on that. But because some charges are being levied criminally against a prominent member of the government, and I'm not going to say who at this moment, against a prominent member of the government, corruption charges against a prominent member of the government. He seems to be one of the heroes that they think should be protected from persecution. Now, Lesotho is signatory to all anti-corruption conventions that the world has made so far, and in my period of stewardship of this government, one of the key issues that I am going to deal with, because that is what the world wants all of us to do, leaders, is to stamp out corruption in my country. And if that is going to cost me getting chased around, then I call upon the world to say, no, I'm doing what the world wants me to do.
Honorable Tom Thabane, how can this situation be brought under control?
We are an organized region, and we have structures within SADC that we use to deal with this kind of situation. And I've passed the matter on to SADC resolution, and I'm sure that in due course, the SADC resolution will triumph and there'll be normality in the country. And the normal processes that government has to look after, including the program that the whole international community has instructed governments to do in Africa, in Europe, in Asia, all over, to root out the corruption, that while I'm in charge, I'm going to fight corruption. Now, corruption is done by people who are mass money, is by people who have a very vested interest. And indeed, when you deal with corruption, you are a little bit an endangered species. But what can we do? It has to be rooted out.
That was Thomas Thabane, Lesotho's Prime Minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Klote from a hideout in South Africa following the coup attempt. Meanwhile, soldiers are still patrolling the streets and occupying government facilities. Lesotho's fragile coalition government collapsed earlier this year, and the nation has a recent history of political instability. From VOA's South African Bureau in Johannesburg, Anita Powell asked a top regional analyst how this happened.
In June, South Africa issued a stern warning to Lesotho after the Prime Minister suspended Parliament in what appeared to be an attempt to dodge a no-confidence vote. But that warning appears to have gone unheeded. The first reports of a coup attempt in the tiny mountainous kingdom, an enclave surrounded entirely by South Africa, came in early Saturday. It appears to be the latest in a series of political crises Lesotho has suffered since gaining independence from Britain in 1966. A peaceful election in 2012 had produced a three-party coalition that many observers thought might finally stabilize the country. However, Tom Wheeler, a former South African diplomat who is now an independent analyst, says instability is built into Lesotho's political system.
Well, I suppose the problem is it's a democracy. It has several political parties. It has a coalition government. The various coalition partners and the opposition don't agree with what the Prime Minister is doing, and therefore have pulled a plug on the coalition. And I think that's the cause of the instability. It's not that, you know, there isn't a sort of an all-powerful leader, Muammar Gaddafi, there, who could just say this is the way it's going to be. This man, who's the Prime Minister, is a democratically elected person from a not-majority party, and that is sort of instability built into the system.
Lesotho is a constitutional monarchy with a king whose powers are largely ceremonial. Wheeler says South Africans should not be overly concerned about upheaval in the enclave, despite their history of armed intervention in Lesotho's previous political crises.
It's not going to be a big issue. When Nelson Mandela was president, Gacha Buthelezi, or whatever he calls himself these days, was acting president in Mandela's absence abroad, and he sent in a SADC force to try and prevent a coup. And they were repulsed by the Lesotho army. It was a great embarrassment to South Africa. So I think we would stand back and say, get on with it, boys, not our problem, and not be worried about it.
From South Africa, Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Thabane told VOA Saturday that he left Maseru to protect his family after receiving information that Lesotho's military had targeted him for assassination. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Somalia, government forces backed by African Union troops have launched a long-anticipated offensive to take more towns from the militant group Al-Shabaab. Officials and witnesses say the offensive began early Saturday and the fighting is ongoing in the town of Bulamerer, southwest of the lower Shabelle region. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
Residents living around the towns of Golwain and Bulamerer in the lower Shabelle region were awakened Saturday by heavy gunfire and shelling. Security forces launched a military effort dubbed Operation Indian Ocean to take more ground in southern Somalia with the aim of controlling the strategic port town of Barawe, which has been the financial hub and Al-Shabaab's route used to ship weapons. Lower Shabelle Governor Abdikadir Sidi, speaking to VOA on the phone in Bulamerer, says the militant group put up a real fight to prevent the Somali government from taking over the two towns.
Those terrorists, Al-Shabaab and Al-Qaeda, they tried really to make a resistance. We get some ambush, you know, before winter, Gulwin, early in the morning, After the rain, even they tried here to make ambush, they fell it. And when we came here, Bolomarer, we get heavy fighting in front of the town and inside the town and out of the town.
For years, Al-Shabaab has vowed to topple the internationally recognized Somali government. In the recent past, the group has lost ground to AU forces. But the group regularly launches sporadic attacks inside the country and neighboring countries that has sent its troops to Somalia. Governor Sidi knows the militant group rule the towns with an iron fist and suppress the population.
They refused, you know, even to come here. International NGOs and local NGOs to assist our people to rehabilitate canals and to open their schools and to visit. The visitors cannot come here, Bolomarek, before we capture it here. The civilians, they are very happy now and they welcome us here.
The military offensive is being conducted as humanitarian organizations and aid workers warn of possible famine like 1 3 years ago that killed more than 250,000 Somalis. In coming days, a political battle awaits Somali officials, and how they approach it could determine the security and stability of the newly liberated towns. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In West Africa, the World Health Organization has shut its laboratory in Sierra Leone after a healthcare worker became infected with Ebola. Nina DeVries reports from Freetown on reaction to the move and how it affects efforts to contain the worst ever outbreak of the disease.
People in Freetown, the country's capital, are worried. Taxi driver Morrison Vandy says Ebola is always on his mind.
Very, very scared. Very, very scared. People are dying. Doctors are dying. Nurses are dying.
Vandy disagrees with the WHO's decision this week to pull staff from its laboratory in Kailaun near the border with Guinea. Security guard Dauda Kamara has similar views.
I'm pleading to WHO. They need to take the affected staff and to investigate how he affected the remaining doctors, staffs should be there trying to treat the victims.
Like most Sierra Leoneans, he wants more international help to come in. But with airlines continuing to cancel flights to and from West Africa, there are fears help might not come. Solomon Sogbandi is a director of Amnesty International in Sierra Leone. He says he understands the reason for caution from the WHO and others, but at the same time wonders if closing the lab is the best decision.
What we want to see at this time is more support from the international community, because to me it's a worrying trend and a worrying situation where we have flights being stopped, especially the issue of WHO pulling away from the areas where we need them most. You know, this is a worrying situation, and I want to appeal to WHO and international community to really step up the support to ensure that we fight this disease to the east end.
Sogbandi says Amnesty is doing its own work to ensure human rights issues are handled properly, such as investigating why health workers continue to lose their lives. WHO spokeswoman Joy Rivaka explains why the organization left Kailaun.
We're worried about their welfare, we're worried about their health, so we brought them here to Freetown, and we have a team ready to be deployed to Kailahun anytime soon as we find out what went there, how our colleague got infected, and what could be the reasons for that. And as soon as it's ready, and that's possibly early next week, WHO will resume its full operation in Kailahun.
The WHO estimates it could take 6 to 9 months to get the outbreak under control. And Rivika says already its workers are stretched to the limit.
Some of the local health workers have stopped going into the treatment center. We have issues of stigma. So that means WHO and partners, MSF and others, are working really hard, long hours every day.
Sierra Leone has more than 400 confirmed or suspected deaths from Ebola. And the WHO worries the situation could get worse. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
The newest party in South Africa's parliament, the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF, is facing a 2-week suspension after getting into a shouting match with members of the ruling ANC party. VOA's Anita Paul examined the tactics pursued by the EFF and whether they can make a difference in a legislature overwhelmingly controlled by the ANC.
No one expected the Economic Freedom Fighters to behave once they got into South Africa's parliament. The far-left party is led by a man expelled from the ruling ANC for causing trouble within the party and who presided over election rallies full of pumped-up, angry youths. That leader, Julius Malema, has been increasingly vocal in recent months about his former hero, President Jacob Zuma, who was dogged by a corruption scandal. And so, no one was surprised when the party courted danger by getting into a shouting match during a parliament session last week. As a result of that outburst, the party's 25 members may now face a 14-day suspension. The exchange started when Malema asked Mr. Zuma directly when he intended to follow the recommendation of South Africa's anti-corruption czar and pay back government money allegedly used to improve his private homestead, Nkandla. Mr. Zuma responded that he had already answered, which prompted this bout between EFF Chief Whip Floyd Shivambu and Parliament Speaker Baleka Mbete of the ANC.
Can we please be provided with answers, not hiding behind Honourable Parliament
Member, that's
presidency.
Not a point of order. Please take your seat. Take your seat.
Shivambu,
take your seat. I have not recognized you.
And he has not answered the question.
Honourable Shivambu,
that is what I'm
I will throw you out of the house. Take your seat. I am presiding.
We want the money.
Take your seat. I will have to ask the Sergeant at Arms. Sergeant at Arms, please assist me with relieving the members who are in this house who are not serious about this sitting to take
serious,
their
Chair,
leave.
Who are raising a point of order.
You're not. No. All we are
Speaker,
asking
is leave the house.
Paying back the money. Why are we getting thrown out?
That money, Nkandla money, must be paid. You can't hide behind presidency.
Honourable members, I'm calling the security.
We want
the
money.
House is suspended for 3 minutes.
This whole business has predictably drawn the ire of the powerful ANC, which has won every election since 1994. In describing the EFF, ANC parliamentary spokesman Moloto Motapo sounds like an exasperated schoolteacher talking about a class bully.
It has been disruptive on more than one occasion. It has refused to abide by the commonly agreed rules of the National Assembly. It is a party that does not really place its emphasis or importance on debate or a contribution of superior debate on matters of national importance, but using its minority to push its opinions down the throat of people that disagree with them by using disruptive tactics that borders on nothing but hooliganism.
Motapo says the ANC wants a strong opposition, but wants them to behave. And so Parliament will meet on Tuesday to consider whether to suspend the EFF in Parliament. But analyst Aubrey Machinkney says a suspension probably won't change the party's fortunes or its attitude. And he says even if others agree with the EFF, the ANC has such an overwhelming majority in Parliament that it won't add up to much in terms of lawmaking.
That, however, does not mean that the ANC itself is not facing a crisis, because it's very clear to me that in 5 minutes last Thursday, the EFF achieved something that the DA and other opposition parties have failed to achieve in 20 years, to highlight the fact that the ruling party and the president have been hiding behind parliamentary rules when they don't want to be accountable.
An EFF spokesman did not respond to calls seeking comment on the controversy. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Beef Cakes is a bar in the upmarket area of Ilovo in Johannesburg that's undergone an amazing transformation in recent months. Its clientele used to be exclusively gay, but now a microcosm of diverse South African society. Although it's a commercial enterprise with the obvious objective of turning over a profit, Beef Cakes also provides a rare place where gay and straight people mix to party. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports in the second part of our series on remarkable South African enterprises.
Ladies and gentlemen, please turn your eyes to the bar and give a big welcome to Cadenza and Ali.
Flashes from a strobe bounce violet light off a gyrating woman's platinum blonde hair, which is streaked with pink. Her lips pout, caked with shocking pink lipstick. She wears a tight and knotted ruffled pink blouse and a powder blue satin dress that accentuates her thighs. She winks.
My real name is Herman. Herman. But I like to say Herman. Yeah. And my surname is Buerta, so I like to say Herman Botha.
A massive mirror ball dapples the audience in diamonds of light. They cheer for Buerta, a middle-class Afrikaans boy, fashion designer by day, one of South Africa's top drag artists, Ali Hoop, by night. Ali Hoop's partner tonight, as they mime along to Madonna's hit, Vogue, is a bigger-boned, tattooed man. He wears a crimson wig, thick scarlet lipstick, skin-tight black and turquoise-striped spandex leotard, and black gloves sporting sharp silver talons.
My name is Cadenza. My real name is Elaine Fleischman. I always had a penchant for playing with Barbies and dressing up in women's clothes.
While the drag queens entertain the crowd, muscular young men in pink and black tank tops prowl the premises, serving pink tea cocktails.
All of our staff are gorgeous, with six packs.
So they look like me.
And me.
Manager Jono Lawson says Beefcakes is modeled on a 1950s American burger bar, a bar that's almost always packed. 18-year-old Daniel Critchfield is one of the hunky Beefcakes.
On Saturdays, we fully booked 3 months in advance, and it's just women. There's just women everywhere, and they go wild and start screaming, but...
Yeah, so... He says once the women get started, he never knows what's going to happen next.
One night, I was walking around, I had no top on. Two plates in my hand with burgers on them. This woman just, I don't know, it dives at me, and she just bites my... The women go crazy. They actually lose their minds.
Beefcakes never used to be like this. Lawson says about a year ago, it was the center of Johannesburg's gay universe, as he puts it, with a clientele that consisted almost completely of gay men. But now, says Lawson, the venue's become a happy, safe, sexy place for women.
So they don't have to be harassed by drunken men at a bar. If they want to get a little bit drunk and throw a name, it's just with, you know, the gays and some girls.
The bar's become so popular with women that he's had to reserve some evenings for bachelorette parties.
So there's moms and grandmoms sometimes coming to those, so you've got to cater for those people too whilst maintaining the fabulousness of drag.
Tonight, as with most nights, Beefcakes is thronged by a diverse, multiracial cross-section of South African society. A group of black ladies, dressed elegantly, tucks into pina coladas. Some Muslim men sit at a table, wearing pink hard hats and whistling at another of Ali Hoop's risque antics.
We've had a 75-year-old woman doing a body shot off one of our boys. We've had big, butch, scary men walking in here petrified, who end up dancing on the tables with feather boas and glitter hats.
Andre's birthday! Dino's birthday!
Lawson announces the birthdays of straight men in the house. He acknowledges that just a few years ago, this open celebration of gay culture would never have happened, not even in a corner of liberal South Africa. But now, says Lawson, his compatriots are throwing off the shackles of their apartheid past to embrace things that were previously taboo.
I think it's just a sign of the times that people don't need to be boxed anymore.
He believes that Beefcakes offers further proof that South Africa is a remarkably tolerant country.
As society becomes more accepting of homosexuals, homosexuals become more accepting of society and everybody starts blending in.
Fleischman says South Africans are finally embracing drag artists like him as genuine entertainers and not just as novelties and freaks. Although he appreciates that his Beefcakes gigs allow him to express his freakishness.
I try to come on to every single person in the audience. I lift my leg. I just came to say
hello. Beefcakes, it's become a That place. Report by Darren Taylor, reporting in from Johannesburg. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, we shall have the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And then we'll have a commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Yes, it's now time for our Saturday Music Spot, so just sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Casanova, le briseur des cœurs des femmes.
Wa Casanova,
le grand tchatcheur. Tu m'avais dit que tu m'aimais. Tu m'as toujours dit que tu m'aimais, Casanova.
Tu m'as toujours promis l'amour de. Tu m'as toujours promis l'amour, Casanova.
Casanova, Casanova, le brise des cœurs. Casanova.
Tu me trompes le lundi, tu me trompes le mardi, tu me trompes mercredi.
Casanova.
Tu me trompes le jeudi, tu me trompes vendredi.
Samedi, tu vas me tromper.
Casanova.
Tu ne vas quand même pas me tromper le dimanche, le jour du Seigneur. Là-haut, il te regarde. Alléluia.
C'est toi, Casanova. Casanova.
Tu me trompes le lundi, tu me trompes le mardi, tu me trompes mercredi.
Vas-y mon frère.
Tu me trompes le jeudi, tu me trompes vendredi.
Samedi tu vas me tromper.
Mon ami docteur musique,
c'est moi-même.
Casanova, premier bureau. Casanova, deuxième bureau. Casanova, premier bureau. Casanova, deuxième bureau.
Vas-y petit pays, dis-leur ça, dis-leur ça.
Casanova,
Rabarabi.
Casanova, oh. Casanova, Casanova,
Casanova,
Casanova,
Casanova, Docteur Musica et Rabarabi, le duo de choc, doctologiquement votre.
Casanova.
Casanova, le briseur des cœurs des femmes.
Docteur Musica,
du Omega. Technologie musicale turbolisée. Washiwa.
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 Premier bureau, Nayou. À deuxième bureau, Monliou. À troisième bureau, c'est toi. À quatrième bureau, toujours toi. Ah, Casanova, c'est toi. À Casanova, toi. Casanova, you. Casanova, toujours toi. Premier bureau, Nayou. À deuxième bureau, troisième bureau, c'est toi. Quatrième bureau, toujours toi. Tous les bureaux, pour toi. À chaque bureau, tu prends. Et à Washington,
ouais, à Motomola, mais c'est toujours toi. Mais toujours toi, dis donc. Tu laisses les passer. Mais toujours toi, à Motomola. Laisse quand même les choses passer aussi.
Mais ma chan, on te voit. Casanova, c'est toi et Casanova, c'est toi, ah, Casanova, Nayu, à Casanova, on est, oh Casanova, you et Casanova, et je toi, à Casanova, et à Casanova, et je toi, et
je veux pas chaud.
Ah.
là-bas, fallait-il que je m'en souvienne? Petite fille, tu vois, on n'oublie pas, je n'oublie pas.
Sentiment, y'a bolingo en vie.
Yes, that was our Saturday Music Spot coming to you fresh from here on Late Night Line Africa. And now the Saturday commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University in Washington. Take it away, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always interesting for me to share my reflections on America's relations with Africa and to examine African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States. This means to say that every passing week, I pay close attention to the headlines coming out of Africa and to the American press, whether they are broadcasters or they are journalists writing about Africa. When I look at the last summit we came out of and the tragedy of Ebola, I was very much concerned about what is happening in American-African relations. And you can see the reality so obvious that when the Ebola came out, personally, I expected the African ministries of health to converge together after the summit and with the existence of the EU to come up with a serious proposal to the Americans and other parts of the world where you have high technology and how scientific research to assist the Africans here and now. The debate is ongoing. The jury is still out on this issue. But again, this takes me back to analysis I've been making over and over again since President Obama came to the White House in the year 2009. I have given many analyses with regard to the Obama phenomenon, how it came about, what has happened, and the various actors who are part of this Hollywood style of drama, leading star, supporting stars, and extras. All of us on different occasions are simply extras. Some others among us became supporting stars in this drama. And of course, the president is the leading star with regard to America. Of course, in other circumstances, out of the United States, he is part of the supporting stars when we deal with serious issues like in Ukraine, as in Gaza, because there are other leading stars in those situations. Netanyahu in Israel, Abbas in the Palestinian situation. And then, of course, you have President Putin out there in Russia and all the other supporting stars around him over there. And then also you have the situation with BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. This is a new equation, new development, and they are beginning to put their feet in the fire. And this is beginning to affect American policy around the world right now. So when you talk about President Obama and his presidency, you can talk about President Obama and his legacy. One of his legacy, which is beginning to be more and more focused on, is Obama and the climate, Obama and the ecological narrative. This is going to be a big issue in America and around the world. And I think much is going to be written by a large number of people around the world who are interested in global climate change. So when you talk about the legacies of President Obama, Obama and the climate, Obama and change are going to be very important, because one thing that must be made categorically clear is the fact that the environment change affects all of us. It goes to biology 101, zoology 101, anthropology 101, physics 101, philosophy 101, and all the 101 narrative with regard to human knowledge. So when we talk about President Obama and his legacies, climate change is going to be one of his legacies. It's going to be a big battle in the United States and around the world. The second thing that has to be understood with regard to Obama, and this is the point I made clearly to many people, when you look at the Obama phenomenon, the manner in which he entered the presidency was unique. Being the first African-American president of the United States is historical, and it has unprecedented development before that, from George Washington to now. So when you look at the legacies of Obama, you can come with a number of other issues. But Obama and the outwitting of history. This is for historians to think about. Because since FDR to now, it is only Bill Clinton, who is the American president, who was elected twice as a Democrat. It didn't happen after Truman, who didn't have a second term. It didn't happen with LBJ, who came after Kennedy. Kennedy didn't have a second term. And then, of course, when Bill Clinton came in, Jimmy Carter, before Bill Clinton, didn't have a second term. That's one of the reasons why one could very well talk about President Obama and the outwitting of history. That history didn't expect that to happen. Many people thought that it was strange that he was elected. Many saw it as a nightmare. But nightmare is not repeated twice. He got a second term. So in this case, he and Bill Clinton will be the only people who will be remembered by historians as American presidents who had a second term. So Obama has a second term, and he has to make sure that he has all the legacy. The African summit was expected to be just that. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But between now and the end of the second term of the president, there must be an order effort to get the Africans together, and the Africans have to get it together. So you now have a new relationship between America and Africa, and the Africans themselves will now come very well prepared in an order dialogue with the president next time around.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of us here at the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us tonight. I hope to see you again tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
New cabinet ministers have been appointed in the transitional government of the Central African Republic, an important step towards establishing a grassroots national dialogue that will pave the way for elections to restore the troubled nation to democratic rule. In one of its first acts since being named prime minister by interim president Catherine Samba Panza, Mohamed Kamoun named 31 officials to head the ministries that will work to rebuild the shattered country. The CAR has been racked by violence since the Seleka armed group began a rebellion in November 2012, which led to the overthrow of former President Francois Bozizé. The new cabinet, which includes 23 men and 8 women, also has representatives from both the Seleka and the anti-Belaka militias that formed to resist the Seleka after it took control, as well as representatives from a range of CAR political organizations. Over the last year and a half, the CAR has had 3 presidents and 3 prime ministers. The intercommunal violence that has accompanied the political crisis has displaced over 1 million people and cost an estimated 2,000 lives. 150,000 CAR refugees have been forced into neighboring countries by the fighting since December 2013. The United States has been heavily engaged in helping to address the nation's humanitarian crisis, and we welcome the announcement of a new, more representative government there. We call on all of the ministers to move ahead quickly with the democratic transition process and to demonstrate by their actions that they govern in the interest of all of CAR's people by including their voices in a broad-based, inclusive national dialogue. Such a transition process and dialogue are critical in reuniting the nation. We categorically reject challenges to CAR's territorial integrity and believe the nation's hopes rest on unity and reconciliation. The dangers of division have been obvious over the last 18 months. The new government and indeed all citizens, must now focus on the hard work of national dialogue and consultation, leading to a democratic transition and elections next year.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.